This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
It makes a lot of sense to just, do things just like you balance your checkbook. Let's apply that exact same thinking to all of the environmental and social impacts that we have.
The Carbon Tracker Initiative and the Carbon Disclosure Project are two ongoing, vital efforts to help us better understand how much fossil fuels and greenhouse gases companies are emitting. First, I speak to my old friend Sea Change Radio co-founder Bill Bowie, who explains how the projects work and what needs to happen to act on the findings of these organizations. Next, we hear from the research director of the Carbon Tracker Initiative, James Leeton, to discuss the methodology, impact, and real-world application of his team's work. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by our dear friend and co-founder, Bill Bowie. Bill, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, it's really great to be back.
First, can you take a step back and explain to us what all this carbon tracking is about? We've heard a lot about a carbon tracker that somebody could use online when they're going on a trip if they want to track their carbon. That's on a personal level. This is on the corporate level. Why don't you explain to us what it is and why it's important?
The science is really where this starts. And, scientists around, 06, 07, 08 started to be able to calculate the amount of carbon that we're able to burn and still have a fighting chance of survival when it comes to climate change. And the science around this started to get really precise enough to start to put numbers on what's being called a carbon budget. So, you've got a budget for your household. You can only spend X amount of money because you've only got X amount of money coming in. Same thing on the environmental side of things. We can only afford to burn a certain amount of carbon before we go over what you might call a threshold or a limit of how much you can burn. And so the International Energy Agency, based on this climate science, started to put numbers for that carbon budget. And it turns out that we've got a pretty small carbon budget compared to our use of it. We're blowing through our bank account if we were looking at this in financial terms. And the Carbon Tracker Initiative really, in their report just about a year ago, they really put a fine point on this and made it visible for the first time, particularly to the broader society and in particular the investment community. And this is the report that Bill McKibben's really incendiary, groundbreaking Rolling Stone article was essentially predicated on this one report about the so-called carbon bubble. And what Carbon Tracker is saying is basically, we've got a carbon budget of, they're saying 565 gigatons. That's how many gigatons of carbon we can afford to put into the atmosphere. The problem is that we've got all of these fossil fuels in the ground that companies are basing their business models on, digging it up, extracting it, and burning the crap. And, all of our society is predicated on this as well. We're all driving our cars. We're all doing – we've got a carbon-intensive lifestyle that depends on this. And unfortunately, there's a disconnect between, what we're doing right now and what we can actually afford to do. So the Carbon Tracker report is hugely significant for this. And Bill McKibben and the 350.org advocacy group have done a great job of translating that research into action by launching a divestment campaign that was really based in historical roots. The campaign to divest from companies that were operating in apartheid South Africa took about 25 years to make it happen, but it eventually toppled that apartheid regime in South Africa. Fast forward to the present, and we've got another divestment campaign. 350.org is targeting pension funds and in particular university endowments and saying, look, there's a disconnect here. You are an educational institution or you're a pension fund that's a common good organization. Your mission is to benefit people and society. And so your investments would be basically contradictory to your mission if you are investing in companies that, objectively speaking, I mean, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is objective science that says that these companies are putting into the marketplace more embedded carbon. So fossil fuels that have carbon embedded in them, that when it's burned, it's going to be emitted. And so that's essentially an irresponsible, if not immoral, thing to do. So that's the case that the divestment campaign is making, and I applaud that immensely.
And then just to give us some perspective here, Bill McKibben's Rolling Stone article, we'll link to that on SeaChange Radio. It's called Global Warming's Terrifying New Math. And as we'll hear from James Leighton, the math is simply this: 2,795 gigatons of carbon emissions are what is on tap right now, what the fossil fuel industry has on tap to burn. 565 gigatons is the budget, and that doesn't really add up.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, these are numbers that are highly vetted, and that's based on the 565 gigatons is really, that's a 50% chance even. That's a roll of the dice that's the toss of a coin to have chances of averting catastrophic climate change.
2 degrees Celsius boost, right?
Exactly, 2 degrees Celsius. And there are other numbers that you could use to have even a more remote chance. A lot of investors and companies are using a different number that only gives us a 20% chance of threading the needle.
Is it correct to say that what you're proposing and what you and your colleagues are trying to strive for is that more transparency, more investor knowledge of this topic will lead to market realities being reflected in carbon as well as EBITDA and other kind of bottom line issues, not just profit and loss, but profit and loss for our globe?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, we look at profit and loss in the financial realm and in the financial realm alone. What we're proposing is to look at profit and loss, use that lens, but apply it across all capitals, not just financial capital, but natural capital as well. This is, the environment, if you look at it from a capital theory's perspective, it's a store of value, so to speak, that we rely on. I mean, we rely on our climate being able to be stable. And right now we're moving towards a situation where we're not going to have a stable climate. And so all of the activities that a company does on a regular basis, it won't be able to do them in the same predictable, stable fashion if seas are rising, if droughts are endemic, if heat waves wipe out the vulnerable people. That's all problematic, not just for humanity, but for business. So, essentially we're proposing something that isn't particularly radical. It's applying the same discipline and lens that we apply to money, apply it to natural capital and social capital as well, so that we know that at the end of the month, we still have sufficient natural capital left to continue drawing on it instead of essentially bankrupting our natural capital stock.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Sea Change Radio co-founder Bill Bowie. He's also sustainability consultant extraordinaire. Bill, so far we've just discussed carbon exclusively, but why don't you try and tell us what the broader implications of the approach you're taking are?
Essentially, you can apply the same thinking that we've just applied, the sort of budget-based thinking or threshold-based thinking, to any kind of environmental or social impact that you know, the sustainability of it is at question. So water, you know, that's a great example. There's only a finite amount of water in the world, and we're currently managing it in a way where our supply of clean water is really shrinking fast. And so you can take a same budget approach to water on the watershed level. An individual watershed has a finite amount of water. It's got a finite amount of users drawing on that water. Obviously, we have to prioritize, you know, citizens and animals and the, you know, the ecosystem's uses of that water first. And so if there is excess water, that's when industrial use can come into play. But even then, you've got a lot of industrial users who are vying for that. And so it really makes sense to take this budget-based approach to all of these impacts, to water, to waste, and even on the social side. You know, a company originally, when it was chartered, it had to have a common good reason for being. It had to enhance social value in some way. And you know, companies do this all the time. They enhance social capital, so to speak. They create goods that enhance our well-being. They create knowledge that makes this a better place to live. And so we can do the same thing of you know, holding a minimum threshold when it comes to social issues.
So it seems like the two most important aspects are is to be able to have more transparency in terms of getting this data, and then having raised awareness and consciousness from consumers and investors.
Yeah, investors really have a huge role that they could be playing, and they're not playing it right now. And, you know, the bottom line of what the Carbon Tracker report says is we're heading towards a bubble when it comes to carbon, where that bubble is going to burst and investors are going to be left holding the bag, or, you know, the financial term is with stranded assets. And, you know, our point is, yeah, that's not just the case with carbon. It's the case with a lot of other sustainability related, you know, environmental and social impacts as well. So it makes a lot of sense to just, you know, do things just like you balance your checkbook. Let's apply that exact same thinking to all of the environmental and social impacts that we have. Once we've got that set, we can start focusing on really thriving at what we're doing in sustainable ways, instead of this artificial thriving that we're doing right now, where we're thriving but at a cost that can't be sustained.
Sustainability architect Bill Bowie, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by James Leeton. He is the research director for the Carbon Tracker Initiative. James, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
first tell us what the mission of the Carbon Tracker Initiative is.
So we're looking to align the stock markets with the objectives to tackle climate change, basically, Alex.
And then let's go through some of the bullet points of how you've divided up this enormous goal. You focus mostly on the supply side of carbon, correct?
So I guess what we wanted to do was think about this as an issue of the stock of carbon that we've got, if you like. So the coal and oil and gas that's out there in the ground and under the sea, and what that all adds up to in terms of potential carbon emissions. And basically, we were set up because some people had this question in their heads. They really wanted to know, you know, if we burn all of that stuff that's out there, you know, in the Arctic and under the sea and across the world, how many degrees of warming would that take us to? And they thought, well, you know, someone must have done this research. There must be an answer out there. And they couldn't find it. There didn't seem to be a kind of clear answer for them to work with, and particularly in relation to their investment. And understanding, you know, how much was on the stock exchange in New York, in London, in Hong Kong, in Sydney, and so on. They eventually got some money together to do the research, and so we got some data together on reserves owned by all those companies listed on the stock exchanges, and turned them into carbon dioxide, and worked out, you know, what would be emitted if we did burn them all going forward, and compared that essentially to a budget of what the limit is if we want a decent chance of achieving the 2-degree goal of limiting climate change. So essentially, it's like, you know, having a financial budget that you can only spend this much, and how much can we burn to get us there.
So give us an example of a larger company like Chevron or Exxon, or which has a lot of fingers and a lot of pies, or a coal company like Arch Coal. How do you begin to approach them and then dig into their numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's really just coming up with the different types of oil. So we distinguish between, for example, tar sands in Canada, because that's, you know, more carbon intensive. So the emissions would be higher from extracting and burning that, as opposed to, you know, a kind of light crude from the Middle East, for example. So you adjust the carbon content in that way. And similarly, you have different types of coal as to whether it's a really kind of one of the sort of dirtier coals, or whether it's, a slightly lighter one. So it's just, using the data that's out there. It's not that difficult. You know, it spawned some understanding in terms of do the math, and it really is just doing some simple math in a way that we think should be mandatory for all the companies to do for us, rather than us having to do it ourselves.
So you're basically holding the oil, gas, and coal companies accountable for the use of their products, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think having sort of worked out that, you know, essentially get the revenues that these companies get from selling their products are dependent on someone wanting them to burn at the other end. So if you limit the emissions, then that has a knock-on effect for the companies that they're no longer going to get all those revenues, because there'll be less demand, the price may drop. And also, you know, there's a question, I think, really going forward, which is where the wasted capital comes in, is, well, if we know we've already got more than enough, then why does it make sense to keep pouring more and more capital into finding more reserves? Isn't that a waste of capital? And couldn't we think of something better to do with it?
So Bill McKibben's organization, 350.org, and his colleagues have been focused quite a bit on divestment. But Carbon Tracker looks through a wider angle lens, if you will. Are you creating more leverage points for organizations like 350.org to begin to turn their glare towards in terms of divestment? Or are you helping more capital markets try to be more efficient with their assets?
I mean, I think the work that Bill and 350 have done has been great in terms of taking the issue out across America and getting more people thinking about it. And obviously, in order to do that, you need a simple message like divestment. I think in practice, you know, once you start talking to some of these big big pension funds and the university funds that they've been targeting, you realize that they're operating within a system, and you know they have, you know, processes and responsibilities that mean they can't just, you know, turn up on a Monday and say, yeah, we're going to sell all our coal stock. So I think that's where we're kind of coming in to be complementary, is, you know, understanding that not everyone can just make a moral choice to sell their coal or oil stocks. And they might need some more financial arguments to understand why it's actually becoming more of a risk to hold things like tar sands and coal, and help them understand why the value in those stocks is not as high as the market currently thinks it is.
And speaking of coal, there's been a lot of talk in that industry with carbon capture and storage, CCS. You, in your report, conclude that all this investment is pretty much a smokescreen. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I think it's just, it needs to be, you know, understood as not a silver bullet that's going to solve all the problems, that it's not a license to just burn as much as we want, because we can just stick it all in the ground later. So, I mean, we used the International Energy Agency's own figures to work out, you know, what proportion of reserves, it could cover, and it just, you know, it comes in too late, you know, too little, too late, basically. And that means we could have used up the budget already by the time it's starting to make a difference. So, you know, it's still an option. It's still something that could make a big contribution in the long term. But I think we just, you know, want to highlight, you know, what the opportunities are now. And, you know, we already see that, you know, in some parts of the world, wind and solar are actually competing, you know, with fossil fuels. And, you know, we know these technologies work. They're becoming more and more certain, less and less risky. And that's where we see that, you know, investors need to understand that the coal and the oil is becoming more risky and the renewables is becoming less risky. So they need to start switching their investments accordingly.
Does a one decide that the methods he's using, they just won't jive? Truly believing and trying over and over again, living in hopes that someday he'll be in with the wind of.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with James Leeton. He's the research director for Carbon Tracker. People can go to carbontracker.org to see some of the work that he and his colleagues have done. It's kind of a silly question now that we have all these multinationals, but just looking at New York Stock Exchange companies and their proven reserves, how do they stack up against companies from other countries?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the surprising things, was just how much, you know, New York was going up in terms of over the last couple of years. You know, it's had more and more carbon listed on its exchange. And that's obviously as a result of the consolidation of the coal industry and finding shale gas and the oil price going up and you know, more money being put into oil sands, and, you know, it's just heading in the wrong direction, basically. And, you know, we only know that because we've done these two reports over the last couple of years. But what we really want to see is the SEC, the regulator of that market, coming in and saying, well, you know, we recognize that this is heading in the wrong direction and we need to be monitoring this and working out how to get it go the other way. And, you know, it's not a purely US issue, because, you know, whilst a lot of the coal that's listed in the US is located in the US and has traditionally been burnt in the US, you know, they're now looking for export markets, and, you know, equally, you get a lot of overseas companies who come and list in New York. So you get a lot of, for example, you know, Chinese companies who are, you know, come and issue shares on the New York Stock Exchange for everyone to buy in the US, but all their reserves are, you know, over in Asia. So it's not just as simple as, oh, these are American reserves that Americans are going to use. It's a global system that, you know, could involve investors in one country and a stock exchange in another country and reserves, you know, somewhere else in the world that are then sold to another market. So it's the global trade of energy that we're looking at. It's not a simple, you know, country by country issue.
So we've heard a lot about Chinese imports of coal over the last few years, especially on the West Coast here in the U.S. How has that reflected in some of your research?
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly been looking at, obviously, the future of the coal market. And China is, you know, at the top of that waterfall, basically. And I think one of the most interesting things was China recently announced that they were going to cap their coal use at around the current level, around 4 billion tons. Within the next couple of years. And that just, you know, doesn't fit with the graphs that everyone puts out in the coal industry, that all graphs go, you know, up and keep going up. You know, they're not expecting that demand to flatline. So I think that could have a real shock around the coal market, because obviously everyone's plan B is, well, we'll just export it to China, which is what we've seen in the US coal industry and the Australian coal industry and the South African coal industry. You know, they're all saying, well, you know, we're just relying on, you know, China's growth and China's insatiable demand for this black stuff. So, you know, they can get caught out pretty quickly once China decides it's going to tackle, actually the air quality issue. It's, you know, it's the smog issue in Beijing that's really driving this, that has made it a political issue, that the people of China are really not happy with the quality of the air in their cities, and therefore the government's recognized it needs to do something about this.
So you are getting into these numbers on a daily basis and know more about what faces us in our carbon future than most people. Does it make you hopeful, or is it depressing?
No, I mean, I think the key thing is people, you know, start understanding where we need to get to. And I think it's been refreshing that, you know, some of the kind of financial actors that we've approached around this issue have actually been more engaged with it than we were expecting. So, you know, we've done a paper with Standard & Poor's, the ratings agency. We've seen research analysis from Citi in Australia, from HSBC in London. And we've seen, you know, pension funds, you know, from South Africa to Australia to Norway to the US kind of come to us and say, well, yeah, we can see that these numbers don't add up. So, you know, we want to start thinking about what that means for our investment.
I can imagine. He's the research director for the Carbon Tracker Initiative, James Leeton. James, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Sway the future to the past. Find what will
endure. You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Trombone Shorty, The Meters, and Alan Toussaint. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.